Welcome back to the Jasmine Star Show. If you've been listening to recent podcasts, I am joined by the one, the only, illuminary, brilliant, kind, power spit in words, the queen herself, Jen Gottlieb. Welcome back to the Jasmine Star Show. And as another reminder, Jen has been picking and curating the most powerhouse entrepreneurs, investors, thought leaders, speakers to radically change your life and improve your peak performance. I have to tell you though, and I know I shouldn't show partiality, I am the eldest of five children. And my mom insists to this day that she doesn't have a favorite child. I have one child and I'm like, I would be hand to heaven shirt. I'm going to be picking a favorite. I am so excited for this episode. I've just been literally just anticipating these amazing conversations with nobody else than CEO, best-selling author, and prominent investor, and AKA, I'm going to spill the tea, she sold one of many businesses for $235 million. Welcome to the show, Kim. I am so happy you're here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to turn it over to Jen because I wanted her to put a little bit of context around why she specifically chose you.
Okay. So I know that when I physically react just in the beginning, nothing has been said yet and I have goosebumps. I know that it's going to be a really good episode. And when I was thinking about people that I wanted to invite, you were the very first person that I thought of. And it's funny because you've done all these amazing things in your career, like probably the most successful woman I've ever met in real life, financially and with all of the things that you've done. But here's what I want to showcase to the world right now, really, when I bring you on. And it's the energy that you have and the enthusiasm behind everything. And just the ease and the zest for life and like the love that you have for what you do and the fun that you have while you do it. I wanted to showcase you to people that don't know who you are because it can be and. It can be both. You can have fun and be a mom and travel and make a lot of money and have a lot of amazing friends and do all the content in the media.
Yes.
You can do it. Yes. And this is an example, y'all. So I really want you to pay attention to this episode. It's going to be juicy. She's going to give you all the goods. But really, I want you to just bask in the energy of Kim Perrell.
Wow. Oh, thank
you. That's so sweet. I love you dearly.
Love you dearly.
So glad to be here with both of you. It's like great women do great things.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So Jen, one of the things, well, I don't want to get ahead of it. Talk to us about your origin story. Like I think that what happens is that we look at somebody and then we immediately put distance between who you are, what you might have, the energy you might embody. And I know that you are a mother of twins.
Oh my God.
And she's a bit.
Two sets of
two?
Twins.
No.
She's yes.
I, oh my gosh.
Oh my
wow.
God.
And are they fraternal or identical?
One set fraternal and one set identical.
What? So Kim, I am a twin. I'm a fraternal twin. Oh. And I've always loved this experience, but now I feel envious that I didn't have siblings that were also twins. Okay, so.
What? Are you a boy or girl twin?
A girl twin.
Me too. A fraternal.
You're
no, you are a girl twin.
Yeah,
I know.
Fraternal girl twin.
I thought it skipped
generations.
And my sister has identical twin girls. So I don't know
what?
It's a DNA. It's a DNA
wow.
thing.
So wow. That is incredible. Okay, so talk to us because oftentimes we put distance between the things that we admire, want, like, encourage. How did you get to where you are today?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's interesting that we talk about twins because I think it had a lot to do with my upbringing. So I grew up in Portland, Oregon, two entrepreneurial parents. And my sister, my twin sister, which now you can relate to.
Yes.
She was always a smart one. She was great at everything. She was great at sports. She was great at school. I mean, she got, you know, she went to the talented and gifted program. Did you guys ever go to that?
I was homeschooled.
I was always weird. Yeah, I was not gifted. And I went home and I was like, am I not the smart one? You know, like, am I the dummy of that family or what? It was not. So from a young age, I was always, and I'm sure you can relate, I was compared to somebody else.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that was my twin sister. And I think that set the stage for, number one, trying not to compare myself to anyone else because my mom was like, you'll never be happy if you do that. But also just embracing my uniqueness. So I didn't, you know, I rode a unicycle. I walked on stilts. I was always kind of different, right? And I think if you can embrace what makes you different and learning that at such a young age, because having to compete with my twin sister who was amazing and like one of my best friends, but she was just always so great.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to learn to just be great at what your own talents and gifts are.
Ugh.
And I think it was a really great lesson at such a young age, and I'm sure you can relate, that you just have to, you know, be your own unique person.
Mm-hmm. At what point did you realize that you were really, really good at like finding money?
Oh, I'm,
well, actually, yeah, wait, right?
Great.
I'm so sorry. I don't want to jump in.
Yeah.
Jen, can you set the intention?
Yeah.
So whenever I bring on a guest host, I'm like, I want the listener and the viewer to say, oh, this is the red ribbon that tied everything through. And so Jen set an intention around these conversations, and I think it parlays
it's
very
perfect.
Yes.
Because it can parlay into your answer perfectly.
Okay.
So when I thought about all the guests that I was bringing in today, what's the through line? What's the theme that they all have in common?
Mm-hmm.
And it actually really started with like you and your book, your last book, Jump. All of the guests that we had had to start before they were ready.
Yeah.
Start with fear. Start not knowing. Start by trying and not really understanding what was going to happen, and then maybe getting an outcome that they didn't even realize was going to happen, but taught them what they needed to know until they got to where they are. So when did you discover that you had this talent and you had this skill? And tell them, because I know the story, but I want you to tell everybody kind of like where, how you got to where you are right now by trying, starting before you were ready.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, we didn't have any money growing up, so I was hustling from a very young age, right? Just trying to figure out how to make everything I wanted to do. I had, my parents were like, we have no fun, so good luck.
I thought you said your parents were entrepreneurs.
They were. And okay, an entrepreneur is like a roller coaster ride of unpredictability.
Ooh, girls.
Yeah, that again.
It literally is a roller coaster ride of unpredictability.
So I never knew what was going to happen. And my dad honestly faced bankruptcy more times than I can count. And honestly, I just wanted a stable job. I'm like, okay. Like when I graduated from college, it's like, I just want a stable job. I want nothing to do with entrepreneurship. Like it was so unstable, right? It's just growing up, it was so, you know, 1 week we couldn't pay the heat. It just wasn't something I wanted to be part of. I was like, can we just go get a job at a GE or something? I don't know. What's a stable company? It's an old school company, but I don't know even what would be Kraft. But no. Anyway, so they were entrepreneurs. And I think for me, growing up, taking the leap in entrepreneurship, because now I've started so many companies, I'm an investor in so many companies, but I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so I got a stable job out of college, and the company raised $120 million in funding. It was during the internet.com. I just happened to be right place, right time. Timing does matter a lot. Time and a little luck.
Where are you in the world at this time?
And I'm in LA. So I'm in LA. It's the height of the dot-com.
Got it.
You know, there's money everywhere. I'm like, oh, this sounds great. We got a lot of money in funding. It's like, great, this is secure. There's no way we could burn through $120 million. Anyway, we know that didn't turn out so well. So they burned through $120 million. Yeah. And the company, you know, they fired me. The company went bankrupt. And I learned that there is no job security. Mm-hmm. Like my father, you know, watching him and my mom and thinking, I need something secure. Entrepreneurship or a real job, there is no job security. So the only thing you can be certain of is yourself. Mm. And that's when I made the jump. And I thought, okay, I wanted to do something different. I decided to do something stable. That didn't work out for me. I was broke. I was unemployed. I didn't know what I was going to do. And at that moment, and a lot of people find themselves, and I'm sure people listening right now, find themselves in the position where they're just at rock bottom, right? Like you hit rock bottom, you don't know what you're going to do. No one believes in you because my track record was not good at the time. And you have to make that bet on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I jumped into entrepreneurship, and because I'd seen it. And at that point I knew, given the unpredictability, at least I knew I could count on myself.
Okay, I want to pause here. The job that you got after college with the startup and who can burn $120 million, and surprise, surprise, a lot of people can. What was the nature of that business? And then you're poor, broke, living in California in one of the richest cities and most expensive cities in the world. And then you say, I'm going to start a business. So what was the business you left? What was what you started? And then how did you come up with that idea?
So the first business, the first internet company was a precursor to Dropbox.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Really. And I love a great vision because
the
idea was right, but it was before cloud computing. So it was a lot of expensive storage.
Yeah.
It was so old school. Just the technology hadn't evolved to where it is today. So it just couldn't maintain the cost for all the servers.
Yeah.
And the market wasn't ready to adopt it because they weren't sure about putting their files on the cloud, you know, like up into the server somewhere. They wanted to keep it on their hard drives, on their laptops. And so it just didn't pick up adoption fast enough. And so we burned through a lot of cash. It was a lot of fun, though, so I have to say. I mean, because no one cared about where the money was going. We were just spending a lot. So it was such a good time. But, you know, it didn't work out. And I think I had enough stock. And I think it's interesting. You think, oh, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be an internet millionaire. I called everyone I knew. I'm like, you could be a millionaire too. Just come work with me. So my friends, I called them all. I'm like, so then it was all everyone I knew. It was so much fun. Been an amazing time until we didn't.
What was your role?
So it started as just like a marketing coordinator, probably a 26 grand.
Okay.
Like, you know, I started at the bottom when there's only seven of us. And eventually I worked my way up to like director of sales. I was good at selling. I love people. I love sell. And eventually then I hired everyone I knew, like my best friends. And then unfortunately time went on and the company, you know, my boss was like, oh, you need to fire your team. I'm like, these are my best friends. I can't fire them. And I mean, I'm young, you know, I'm 22 years old. And then I had to fire all my team and then they fired me. And I mean, honestly, many of them wouldn't talk to me for years. When you're young, you don't understand specifics of business and how it works. And so it was such a huge blow to obviously my ego, but also just my relationships. And it's like, I never want to be in that position again.
Yeah.
And I tried to get a loan to start a company.
What did you want to do?
Well, I loved internet marketing. I mean, this is the beginning of the internet. And people said, the internet's a fad. It's never going to happen. Everyone go back to using the yellow pages and the billboards. And I was like, I don't think so. The internet is here. And I mean, it's probably how, not to go down a different, but AI and Web3 and crypto and the blockchain. It's like, there is a definite utility for the, like the internet's not a fad, obviously now. We know 20 years later.
Right.
But at the time, you know, people were like, listen, every company around you is going under. Like, you should get a real job, Kim, a real one. I'm like, I just had a real job and that job didn't work out. So I'm not been getting another real job. I'm going to start my own job. So I needed money. No one would give me a loan. My parents told me to get a real job. Everyone laughed at me. I wanted to start a digital advertising company.
Got it.
And the only person that would give me a loan is my grandma. So I called her and I said, you know, Nanny, I want to start this internet company. She's like, what's the internet? Because that is so early. Didn't matter. And she gave me a $10,000 loan. And with that, I started my first company from my kitchen table. And yeah, to your point, I couldn't live in LA. So I went and moved in with my boyfriend because I could live rent free. I didn't have any, you know, so I mean, I was really at the
end. You made it work.
Yeah.
And you believed in this when nobody else did.
Yes.
This is what's so fascinating to me at this point in the journey. Everyone was saying the internet's a fad, the internet's a fad. Like, and you just experienced something crashing and burning that was related to the internet. But you still believed that this was going to work. Like, you stayed true to your gut and you went for it. You went as far as to like go move in with a boyfriend and ask your grandma for money. Like, that's far. What do you know where that belief came from? Or you were just like, I've got a hunch.
I could see from the company that the dollars were moving. I could see the shift in advertising dollars. And I could see, you know, I'm big companies, not everyone, but I could see that the shift was happening. And the noise of all the internet companies going under, I think just, you know, made a dark cloud. Fundamental opportunity was still there. And I believed. And I was young and ambitious. And yes, I was afraid, but the worst that could happen is I hit rock bottom. I was already at rock bottom.
You're only
like, what's the worst work out and get a real job again? I don't know, right? So I think just that belief in yourself and the belief in the opportunity, regardless of what anyone else tells you, and I mean, I'm sure you've seen it and heard it before, like, oh, it's all fad. And it's not. It's your belief has to be greater than everyone else's doubt.
Oh,
everyone's going to doubt you. Until they don't. And they're like, oh, I knew it was going to be successful. I know you did.
So let's go back to that first company. And they say, oh, I knew it was going to be successful. What year was that?
2003.
So 2003. And you're at like the kitchen table of your boyfriend's house.
Yep.
And you're living rent free.
Yeah.
And you have $10,000 for a nanny.
Yes.
What are you doing? How fast does the business grow? What do you do? Like, when do you look back and say, this is a business?
Oh my gosh. Well, I was committed.
Okay,
so I maxed out all my credit cards.
Okay,
I was in it. I'm like, because the other side of it is I had to go back and try to figure, you know, tell everyone they were right, which I definitely don't like doing. So I'm like, I'm going to make this happen regardless. And I started, I mean, an internet advertising company was at that time was basically putting sponsorships on Yahoo.com, right?
Right.
Google wasn't even the biggest search engine at that time. So it was like a different game. But there was big sponsorships and just connecting advertisers with media on the internet. I mean, now it seems so simple. But at the time, you're convincing people to take their spend offline and move it online.
Yeah.
And we had great, I think the key for me is I had built great relationships at the company I was at. And relationships are the cornerstone for success. So I was able to call the advertisers and the publishers. And they trusted me, regardless of my history, that I was going to be able to perform. So I think that was a great lesson for me is the relationships are really the lifeblood and like the red thread throughout your life and throughout my life for sure.
Yes. Mm. Okay, so we hear this and I assume, and wrongly, I hope, because then it wouldn't make me feel so bad, but I was reading on one of your blogs where you talked about pivoting and you said that you've invested in over 100 companies and 90% of those companies pivoted at least once. Now, in your blog, you mentioned three signs it's time to pivot your business. And I think that prior to like getting your teeth knocked out and losing a rib and breaking your arm and having an iron lung because you're an entrepreneur, pivoting felt like it was a loss or a mourning or something. And so your three signs, and if you can build on them, number one is your sales are slow, plateaued, or declining. Number two, customers aren't responding to your products like you thought they would. Number three, one product line or service significantly outperforms anything else you offer. So I wish I read your blog post, 7 years ago for the multiple pivots I've made, but there's somebody who's listening and one or all three of them are resonating. From your experience, talk to us about the pivot. You're the first time you pivoted and now your perspective is I was ground level when I had to pivot. And now you've invested so many times and you see these other companies pivot. What are the commonalities? What are the threads? What can we avoid? What can we embrace? I want to talk about that.
Yeah, I think even today, most of the companies I'm talking to are pivoting.
Yeah.
So if you're not pivoting, you're probably not in the right place.
Especially
you should be growing. And so I think I would challenge anyone listening to think, should I be pivoting? Unless your sales are skyrocketing, which is amazing, and congratulations, you should be really proud, which is probably like the 5%.
Yeah.
The other 95%, what should you be doing differently? Or what could you be doing differently? Is there an opportunity if your one product does way better? And it's maybe not the idea or what you thought was going to do well that you should lean into.
Hmm.
And so I think giving yourself the blessing to pivot, because it never turns out like you should. I'm an early stage investor. As you said, I know whatever you pitch me, and I get pitched all the time, likely is not going to end up the business that you create.
Wow.
So you're
not investing in the business, you're investing in the founder.
I'm investing in the founder.
Because you know that pivots are the game.
Yeah.
And you want to look at that person and say, I believe you're going to pivot because I don't know if this right here is the exact idea.
Yeah, I hope it is. I hope what you're pitching me is there's a huge market opportunity and you're going to make, you know, this great company out of it. But if the market opportunity does not come to realization, do you have the self-awareness to pivot?
Ooh. Ooh. When did you first pivot? Like if you could look back at your career and be like, this was a significant pivot in my career.
Oh my gosh. Well, my first company, we were selling internet advertising and then the market bottomed out. Then we actually started creating or buying products. We didn't have any advertisers. And so we bought them ourselves and then sold them online. So pivot.
Yeah.
If there is no advertisers, you have to become the advertiser.
Right.
So that was very early in my career. And I think that just shows that you have to be open to new opportunities. And thinking how you're going to start is how you're going to end up.
Mm.
It's just never, it's honest, I've been doing this for 20, it never happens that way. So the faster you can acknowledge this isn't working and look for a different solution, the better off you're going to be.
Mm. And did you automatically know that that was the pivot that you needed to make? Or did you try a couple of things before you went into starting to buy the products? Or you were like, how did you come to that? Were you like, no, we really need to start buying these products right now? Or were you like, we need to pivot. What do we do? And let me look for the signs.
I'm always trying new things.
Okay.
So test and learn, test and learn, test and learn. Mm-hmm. So looking at different opportunities all the time. And I think even my companies today, if it doesn't work, try something else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't be too steadfast to say, this is my vision. I get the vision, but how you get from A to Z could look completely different in the reality than how you think it's going to look. So the faster you can acknowledge that,
yes,
makes a huge difference in your business success.
Mm. So I have a tendency, I think part of a weakness as mine as an entrepreneur is I have a tendency to hold on to things longer than I should. And I don't mean this like in the physical way, like I don't know how to cut things in business. It's like I hold on to the emotions associated with the decisions that I've made. And so there was one time where we took a pretty significant pivot and I held on to that pivot for months. Like I felt like it was like a chink in my armor. I felt like it was like the first kind of brutal blow that I took. Then we had to downsize and we didn't have to. I got to downsize the team. And I am telling you, I sat with that way too long. I sat with it for months and months and it ate at me. And I was in a mastermind. It was all men. And at lunch, people were talking about his runway. And he's like, you know what? I do need to make those cuts. At a break, he cut a third of his team. And at dinner, She was like, it's been a really hard day. 2 hours, we're back at it. And I was like, what? That's what you do? Like, 12 hours later? And he's an empathetic, kind human being. But he's like, this is a business.
Yeah.
At what point did you realize that holding on to losses, pivots, changes, like, when did it not serve you? What is somebody who is right now is like mourning the loss of 3 other businesses that didn't work out? Like, what are the tool sets that you've seen from very powerful entrepreneurs being able to move past it? How do we let go? How do we learn the lessons? How do we minimize the time that we sit in that funk?
Yeah, I think it comes, now it just comes from confidence knowing that everything will be okay, right?
Mm.
It's easy to look backwards and say it all worked out.
Yep.
Yeah. When you're in it, to your point, it's hard. And especially when you're dealing with, I mean, teams are really hard because you love them and you're loyal to them and you don't want to make changes. But I also think the more you make change, the more confident you get in making those changes and knowing that. So I, you know, like I talked about resilience and it's a muscle. So you need to build it all the time. So you need to be constantly putting yourself in places that feel uncomfortable, in business situations that feel uncomfortable, even, you know, having to let go of people, feel uncomfortable. And once you get to the other side, you're building your confidence.
So true.
That you can do it again.
So yeah. Yeah. So true.
And so it's not that you don't emotionally care, and I totally get that, but you're able to move faster, you know, much quicker in the turn.
You have proof.
Yeah.
You have proof. And you have so much experience in this because you have so many businesses, so many companies, so many pivots, assuming so many failures that you just had to move past, but you had to be in that discomfort and go again. So one of the things that I love so much about Kim, and every time I talk to you, I just feel refreshed. It's such a reminder to me that you're like, it's okay. If it happens, it happens. And then you just figure it out. And she genuinely lives by that. And I'm like, oh, it could be that simple. Just move on and figure it out. And I know Marie Forleo has a book called Everything's Figure Outable. Mm-hmm. And I actually really do love that phrase because if you keep on going, you will eventually figure it out. And if you just look back, I'm sure you do this a lot. Like even just the story that you just told, you were like at your boyfriend's kitchen table with $10,000. And now look at you.
I know.
It's amazing. So you look backwards and you connect the dots. Of course, everything's going to work out. So if something messes up now, it's like, I could do it.
I have 2 questions though. Can I pop in?
Yes.
2 questions. Number one. What happened with the investment with Nanny? I want to close
that. Oh, yeah.
If I didn't ask and figure out, I would wake up in the middle of the night and be like, what happened there? And then secondly, knowing that that role that your nanny played in your first business, you do not look like nobody's nanny. That is not anytime soon. However, you play that role in somebody's life. How do you determine who you're investing in? Because I think that people are listening and they're not sure if their business is investable yet, but what skills could they start building to kind of optimize the possibility for an investor?
Okay, I love that. So my nanny, I sold the company in 2008 to a company out of Munich, Germany, which is amazing, for close to $40 million. So
Nanny got paid back.
Nanny got
paid back. We got a trip to Europe. We have such great memories.
So, yeah. Incredible.
Yes. Nanny, she got paid back and then some, which is amazing.
Amazing.
And you know what? It just goes back to investors. Like, you're making a bet on people. And when that happens, it's just an incredible, their belief in you, you know, and that's why, and again, why I invest. And it's interesting to look back and think, so after I sold, I started investing. So I started investing in 2008, very early.
Wow.
And investing in other people because I had someone make a $10,000 bet on me and it paid off huge. What if I could make the same bets on other individuals moving forward and that have such an impact in their life, right? That was a game changer. That's the point that my life actually went in a different direction. And I want to give that opportunity to other people. And I want to give that mentorship now, because I've been there, to others to help them achieve success. And when you think about the investments that I've made and the people that I've bet on, and you ask, what is it I'm looking for? So I wrote a book called The Execution Factor, because I get pitched the same idea all the time. Like, ideas are a dime a dozen. And someone's like, hey, Kim, sign an NDA. I'm like, I'm not going to sign it. Like, literally 10 people just pitched me the same idea. And there is no different. I mean, yeah, it's all about execution. And I think there's 5 key traits that I look for. If I look in all the entrepreneurs that I've invested in that had successful outcomes, and so I've had about 40 different exits already, a lot of good vintages still to come. But one, they have a vision. They have that crystal clear vision of what they want to achieve. Like, they know what it is. 2, they're passionate, right? And passion isn't just about what you love. It's about what you would suffer for, right? So, you know, passion is a Latin root word of pain or suffering. And so
what would you stay up late, work the weekend, get up in the morning? Like, what would you actually sacrifice for? Yeah. You have to have action, which is taking that first step, even though you're scared, even though you don't want to do it. You mm-hmm. have to be able to take that first step every single day. And it doesn't have to be a lot, just one step every single day. Mm-hmm. You have to have resilience because everything's going to go wrong. Like, I already know that. And then you have to have great relationships. And relationships, as I mentioned originally, just are the cornerstone of success. And if without them, you will not be successful. Like, I guarantee it. So I think if you can get these five traits, and that's why I wrote about it, is if you can really lean into how to improve on these specific traits, you will be a successful entrepreneur.
Okay.
She painted it out for y'all.
Yes, and hell yes, and amen. Okay, but I'm going to get super granular because if I'm standing in front of you, how do I display? I have maybe 7 undiluted minutes to capture your attention, sell the vision, show I'm passionate, talk about my results. Like, how do you do that? Like, in a very practical way.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to hear a story. I'm investing in people. I want to hear, why are you doing this? What makes you the one person that can pull it off? And how am I as an investor going to make a lot of money?
Mm.
Like, what's the big market opportunity? And I think you can do that. I mean, I do a lot of elevator pitches. I see it all the time. I think if you show up and you just start, I want to actually know about you. Why are you here? Why are you going to be able to do it when everything's stacked against you? How will you actually pivot and make sure my investment pays off?
Candidly speaking, how much time does somebody have? Like, we know that somebody can be like, oh, your pitch is going to be 22 minutes or 30 minutes. But like, when do investors know?
Oh, pretty early.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty early.
I'd say that, do you say that like you can get a sense even before you walk in the room with somebody if you have like a sense of their energy and what the product is, or do you need to actually see them and meet them and talk to them?
I don't need to see them. I'd rather see them, mm-hmm. meet them, talk to them because you can feel their energy. But listen, if you have a great business, it has to be a good business that I'm going to invest in. But then you could be a great business and not the right person leading it. So it really comes down to the person. I think I know pretty quickly if A, it's a good business, and then B, if you're the person that can actually pull it off.
Okay, so we know the good things. Like, I'm pressing on this because people listening, and Jen was like, Jasmine, you really kind of just start excavating. And I'm like, I know, because what happens is people will DM me and be like, yeah, but what did Kim mean by this? And I'm like, I don't know why I'm not Kim. So I'm putting myself in their shoes because it is enough to know that we must display our personal story, what we're passionate about, what we stay up at night. This is the hill that we're going to die on.
Yeah.
But you know early.
Yep.
So then what are key factors when somebody is pitching you that, you know, great idea, good business, I like you, but it's not you?
I want you first to show me there's a proof of concept. Ideas, again, there's a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. Tell me that one person has purchased whatever it is you're going to try to create. Because an idea is really hard, right? When I went to my nana, I'm like, I'm going to make an internet company. She's like, I have no idea what you're doing. Like, that's really hard, right? But I'd like to understand, hopefully you've created the company of something, a need you have.
Right.
Something that you personally
got it,
are connected to. And that would show me, like, and I love when people start small. So it's like, oh, I'm making something in my kitchen. I went down to the farmer's market, started selling it there. Okay, you got proof of concept to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you have to actually have taken that first step and gotten out there and tried. Like, go start selling door to door. I don't really care. But if you're just talking and sitting in your kitchen doing nothing, like, I need to see execution.
Yes. Okay. So if they don't show proof of concept or execution, what is another thing that it just shows it's not a good fit?
Well, I don't like when you show me it's going to hockey stick in year 5. So usually people come in there, there's my financials, and it is very low, very low. And then in the 5th year, it goes really
high.
You're going, okay, guys.
Yes.
Let's be realistic. Or my profitability is going to be $40 million in year 5. I'm like, it's mm-hmm. not going to be. Like, yeah. I already know that. So maybe be more realistic on the financials. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see profitability, like business basics, right? Don't tell me you're going to lose a ton of money if you don't have a line of sight of how you're going to raise money to cover how much you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. Like, I like profitable companies that are actually good companies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a great company can always have a successful exit. Mm-hmm. So when I started my first company, I was really focused on profitability. And we made a lot of EBITDA and profit because I was focused on it.
Mm-hmm.
First company I worked for, I didn't really care. They were just like, let's just spend as much money as possible and hope it works out. It just doesn't work like that, especially in today's environment. Investors want to see companies that actually can maintain their own cash flow.
Yeah. Okay, so if I heard the story correctly, got $10,000 and you were proving that you had the chops and the chutzpah to be an entrepreneur. And then you sold that, if I heard it correctly, for $40
million. Yep.
Great. And then you built a different business and you sold that business for $238 million because you were hard-nosed about profitability.
So actually then, it's interesting. So I sold my first. So yeah, I had like an earnout and the whole thing on the first company. So I stayed. And then we decided—
Can you explain what an earnout is?
Oh yeah, sure, an earnout. So usually you get like a lump sum of money for the first tranche. So you're like, hey, Kim, I'm going to give you $20 million cash on day one. And so I went to my ATM and like, this is the good. And yeah. So I went, I got the little thing. It actually had too many zeros for even like to get out of the ATM machine.
And I'm like, okay.
Oh my gosh, called my husband. I'm like, this is amazing. And then for the next couple of years, you get another 20 based on achieving milestones. I actually love a good earnout because it's really, again, based on if I can achieve what I say.
Yeah.
And as a company buying you, I want you to be successful. So I think it's a win-win if you give realistic targets and like financials to buyer.
Yeah,
I think it's a great, I'm actually a big believer. If you don't, then as a buyer, I'm thinking you're never going to hit what you're selling me.
Right. Is that traditionally 3 years?
Yeah, it's usually, usually 2 to 3 years.
Okay. Cool.
And so I stayed and I hit my earn. I mean, I hit my whole earnout within the first year. So I just nailed it. Like,
Oh, God. You're one of them.
I know.
Unicycling.
I would be called like sandbagging at numbers. I'm like, don't sandbag. Yes. So everyone's
saying, I'm sure your twin was very impressed by you at that. She's like, wow.
Yeah. Hey.
Yes.
Yeah. She was so excited.
So then after that,
then I actually went on to take over some of the company I was running. We had a great big company, and then we actually resold the company in 2014 for $235 million to Singapore Telecom. So it's actually like a two bite of an apple is what they would say.
Whoa.
Sold the company again. So we consolidated, we bought a bunch of companies, and we resold it. And then so we sold half to Singapore Telecom.
Okay.
Whoa. Yeah.
Whoa. This is the first time I've ever even heard the concept of two bites of one apple. So you hit your goals within that first year and then you stayed with the company. Yeah. What was your rule? Because oftentimes that people call it golden handcuffs. They're like, yeah, I can hit those right when I exit. And then I can just like do my dang thing. I'll cash out.
Yep.
But you didn't. You said, I'm going to do it and then I'm going to do it better.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What is your role? How are you getting?
Yeah. So I took on as we had offices all over the world. So from Australia to Europe. And so I took on as president of the whole company.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then
what is the time you hit your goals within a year? And what is your title at that time?
I was still CEO of my division.
Oh, okay.
My company.
Okay.
And then I took over president of the hold. There's like a holding company.
And is there anybody else in the organization who's like, what the hell? Like,
I think we're like, she's killing it. I don't know. Like, let her do whatever she wants.
Let her run the company. Okay. Whereas you go from CEO of your division to president of the company.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you move? What does life look like for you here?
Life looks like I'm on a plane a lot. Okay. So we had offices in Munich. We had offices in Madrid. I mean, it was fun. Like, I was having a great time. I was flying all over the world. I was having,
Were you married to John at this time?
Yes, I was already married.
Yeah.
I didn't have any kids at that time. So it was amazing. It was like a great life, actually. We were growing. It was such a great time. We were profitable. Everything was in a great space. Then the market took another dive and we decided we would not be able to IPO at the time because our intention originally was to IPO. Couldn't IPO because the market's closed. I know. And so it happens all the time. And so we had to pivot. Okay. So then we ended up, we were running out of cash.
Okay. Hold on. I'm like
another pivot, Jess.
Through and through born storyteller. Because it sounds like, okay, we couldn't IPO. That was a thing that we were gunning for. So now we pivot. But where are you at mentally, emotionally, like, what does it feel like in this space?
Feels like we're in one of the most exciting times in the internet, I would say. We had partnerships every time, like Twitter, Snapchat, LinkedIn, we had partnership, Facebook. You start naming it, we were forming partnerships with these companies.
Okay.
So it was a growth period. It was fun.
Okay.
It's like we were at the cutting edge.
Even if it didn't turn out the way that you were expecting with the IPO, it still felt like, okay, well, that's not it, but like
we're having a blast.
We're going.
Yeah, we got to figure out. Yeah, at that point you're going, I got to figure out how to get us to a safe place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have 500 employees. We're doing $500 million in revenue. It was a big company. We're like, we got to figure out at home because we're going to run out of cash. I mean, we knew we were going to run out of cash if you don't have an exit of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we end up we ended up splitting off the company into different pieces. I went and took over as CEO of the digital division of Singapore Telecom.
Yeah.
And then we sold the other to a European company. So we did two deals.
I want to ask a question about
when she says these things like, so yeah, duh, like I did this, but I have a feeling, and this goes back to your main concept of like relationships are everything.
Yes.
So as I listen to all of these things that you've done, I'm visualizing you making all of these relationships with all these people, because these moves couldn't have been made without relationships. You're like Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat. Like, are you going into these places and building relationships with humans to make these things happen?
Yeah. I mean, our team was. Yeah. We had a great team. I mean, you're only as good as the team that you surround yourself with. And right. I think for us, we had an A-plus team. Mm-hmm. Everyone we hired was incredible.
And that's relationships, too.
That's relationships. Some of the people I started with 20 years ago, I still work with today.
So amazing. So I want to hear from Kim Perrell, who's clearly a master at relationships. Mm-hmm. And what would you say to the person listening? Is they're like, oh, I'm not connected. I don't know how to network. I don't know how to build these relationships. What would you say your, I guess, tips that you could give to people for creating that kind of a network would be if they don't feel like they're great at it?
Yeah. I usually tell people three of the most powerful words you could ever say are, let's have coffee. Let's have coffee. It's the easiest way to form a relationship. I don't even drink coffee. So I'm a tea lover. I don't even drink coffee. But if I'm ever trying to forge a new business relationship, a partnership, and anything, I usually reach out and say, let's have coffee. It's so easy. It's less than 30 minutes. We can have it virtually. I'd rather be in person. If you can do it in person, always better.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm looking for a mentor, if I'm looking for a book agent, if I'm, you name it, I'm having coffee. I'm having a lot of coffee. I'm not even drinking the coffee. I'm just having, I think it's so easy. It's like less than $4, maybe $5 with inflation. I have no idea at Starbucks, but it's such an easy way to reach out and say, hey, Jen, do you want to have coffee?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, sure. Why not? It's easy.
We did that one time.
Yeah.
And like, I just drank coffee. We drank tea.
Oh, see? Yeah. I'm like, well, we drank some tea.
Yeah.
But I feel that that's an easy way for anyone listening to start building their relationships and not looking at it as, what am I going to get?
Yes.
You should look at it as, what am I going to give? I'm going to give my time. I'm going to give my, you always have something you can give. Mm-hmm. And really thinking of it from that way. I never have coffee thinking, what am I going to get from someone? I'm looking at it like, how do I build a long-term relationship? Mm-hmm. My whole life is built on this. Mm-hmm. And so looking at it as, what can I give to this person? Whether my support or my advice or a connection. I love networking, putting people together.
Yeah.
So I think thinking about that as a really easy hack that could set you up for success.
So when you think about building those relationships, as an investor, somebody's hearing this, and what is the level of expectation from an investor? Like, do some people want you to be there with it? Like, talk to me about, I know everybody's different. In your dream case scenario, are you collaborating? Are you saying, I trust you, go with it? Like, what is that level of connection? And especially because you've invested in so many different companies.
I'm really good on the early stage. Really good. Or if there's a problem.
Can you clarify early phase?
Yeah, early stage. If you're just getting up and started, I'm really good on helping. Here's the strategy. Here's how to get going. Here's who to call. Here's what to do. Here's the people you need.
Okay.
So just the early stage, setting the business up. Or if I'm in trouble, you know, like I need to pivot my business. How do I do it? What should I do? Who should I call? I'm really good on the, like, I tell people, I'm the call, like that one call. If you get one call, call me.
Yeah.
I'll help you get out.
Yeah.
Why? If you get in jail, call me. I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. You get in a bind, company's not doing well, call me. On the day-to-day, not my expertise, and I don't thrive there. Mm-hmm. I thrive in problem solving and trying to build relationships or networking or connecting or raising capital. But I think as an investor, you're not in the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. You're there to provide mentorship, guidance, strategic support, connections.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for people who have investors, do investors want their business that they've invested in, like the founders, to be reaching out to them?
Yeah, they need help.
Mm.
So here's something that I want to lead into, because I know that a lot of people do not like asking for help. I'm even feeling that right now. Like, I don't, even somebody that's like, let me help you. People don't want to ask, because, you know, I think a lot of people are very afraid to ask for help. They don't want to seem weak. They don't want to seem like they don't know, especially somebody that they pitched please give me money for this amazing idea that I have. I'm amazing. And they just sold themselves to you and they spent so much time and energy selling themselves to you. And you're like, yes, okay, I'll give you money. I could imagine that, and anyone that's listening to this that maybe is pitching investors or has investors, it might be a little scary. Ask your investor, okay, I'm going to buy. It almost makes you feel like maybe you're failing. And that does, even though the investor knows that, of course, you're going to fail. But the entrepreneur might be uncomfortable asking for help. So from the investor's standpoint, how does it feel when the companies that you support come and ask for
help? Oh my gosh, I want them to. You have to have enough self-confidence that you ask. Yes. I mean, I've been there. I've done it. I know I can help you skip a lot of lines. But if you don't ask, how can I help? So I tell people, if you don't ask, you don't get. Start asking. Call me. If you need help. And I think to your point, it's scary. I get it. Right now, I have a lot of different companies. I call people and ask for help all the time. Like literally all the time. Even the other day, remember? I was like, oh, Jen, I got an idea. Can you help me?
Yes, 100%. You asked me right now.
I was like, oh, I call people all the time.
But here's the cool thing about asking for help and how I reiterated in my mind is that it feels really good to be able to help someone you care about.
Totally.
Like I was like, I need to help. Yeah, because it's going to make me feel amazing.
And it's fun.
It's fun. So like, I know, and I know you get joy out of helping people.
Yeah.
I was like, we're going to look for a restaurant to go out to eat after this. Oh, and I was like, Kim will help. So excited.
Yeah.
I said, if we ask Kim where to go, she'll be so excited to be able to help us because that's what lights her up. And so if you don't ask somebody for help, you're almost taking an opportunity away from them to feel amazing because they were able to help you. Because the best way to feel good is to help somebody else.
Yes, it is. To give.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
People want to help. So I think anyone listening, just assume. And if, honestly, if they don't want to help you, it's not the people you want anyway. Like, call someone else.
Yes.
Right? Don't get discouraged because someone does. Sometimes people text me and they're like, hey, I'm still here. I'm like, oh my God, I'm just buried right now. I got 4 kids. I'm just trying to like get them on the bus without crying here. You know, I can't help you right now. But it doesn't mean, I also think persistence pays off. So if you keep, text me again. It's not
got
that,
it.
Yeah.
Got
you know, it just went down the chain of text and I forgot.
Yeah.
Right? I don't take it. I think people take it, internalize it. To your point. Like, oh, Kim didn't text me back. She doesn't want to help. It's actually not that at all. Kim's just busy and she's got to figure out her own life before she can come help others. You know, it's like the airplane. Put on your own seatbelt before you can help others. Like, okay, if I'm... So I think making sure the persistence and continue to ask.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That's so good. The follow-up is so important.
So important.
So many people give up after one try with everything. With the sale, with the ask, with the reach out, with whatever they want. They're like, oh, they didn't answer. I find that even with me, when people are pitching me for something, whatever it is that they want, I oftentimes like don't get back to them the first or the second. But if they keep following up, I love the chutzpah behind the follow-up.
Me too.
I'm like, oh my gosh, you're following up with me for the fourth time? I am a yes for you.
Yeah, me too.
I like the energy. That means you really want that, like my help.
I could not agree more. I have this guy, so interesting. So I put out a job rec on LinkedIn. I got 3,000 resumes. I'm like, how am I even to find? I can't even go through the resumes. So a guy just keeps emailing me all the time. I'm like, fine, I'll just give you a shot. Because I can't go through the res. I literally am like, I can't go through 3,000 resumes. So whoever, he keeps calling me. And so I actually, I'm like, okay.
There you go.
So don't underestimate that. Just like the direct contact.
The persistence.
Persistence pays. But it literally happened 30 days ago. And now the guy's working for me.
Interesting.
He was so persistent.
And enthusiastic. And that's
enthusiastic.
Bad attitude.
Yeah.
To enthusiasm. Because here's something that I get from you a lot, like that I learned from you just by watching you and being around you. And I want everybody else to really absorb this, is your enthusiasm about everything. And it's contagious and infectious. How important would you say enthusiasm is when it comes to business?
Yeah, it's passion, right?
Right? Like you can feel it.
Enthusiasm and passion just goes together. And you really can tell if someone loves what they're doing. I mean, I love what I'm doing. I love entrepreneurs. I love helping people.
Yeah.
So, and people will, you'll see them light up when they're talking about something they really are passionate about.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
And then if they get, if they're enthusiastic, you're like, me too. Mm. Right?
So, okay, let's talk about enthusiasm. I get so lit up when I see underrepresented people of color and or women get investment funding. Like, it is just this, like, I feel like a piece of me got it too. Can we get from your perspective, like, just the state of the industry and, like, talk about, like, what those numbers are, how they've changed, how somebody can prep themselves to be, like, a formidable competitor when it comes to pitching themselves?
First of all, it's terrible, the numbers.
Yeah.
Like, the less than 2% of females get VC funding. Mm. Do you know about that? I mean, it's terrible, right?
Know that percentage.
Less than 2%. Where's the other 98 going? Yeah, not helping. So I really try, to your point, to help and invest in females and underrepresented founders, like, because they need help just getting to the table, right? And it's the relationships that actually get you to the table. So first you need someone that has relationships that can like pull you through and pull you along. And I think that's why asking for help and reaching out and getting mentorship is so important. So I think the statistics are not good or not in our favor, and we need to help other people rise.
Yeah.
I think I've got a great brand with a woman that is one of 100 Black female founders that's raised over $1 million. And like, I feel really proud of that. And she's incredible. And I think the more we can lean in and help, again, just help other people get to the table and get, and it is, it literally comes down to relationships, because it still is. Listen, a lot of, not the investors are not probably equally, it's all men mostly. There's not a lot of female investors. There's more and more every day. When I started, there was like me and someone else.
This is you.
I'm like, it's just me. But it's great to see more and more VCs, more and more people investing, you know, more and more women stepping up and investing, because they're going to help the next generation of women. Mm-hmm. They're going to next help the next generation of underrepresented founders. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to make our business is better. I love seeing more diversity at the table. Like, we have to do that to be better companies, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I feel like there's a part of me that's like, don't say it. Don't say it. And I'm like, I'm going to say
it. Yeah, you should say it. What?
So, as a Latina bootstrap founder, when I hear people say, we need a chance to get at the table, I agree. But I don't think that the terms at which somebody is assessing my business should be different. Like, how do I build a company that is beyond a shadow of a doubt? You're not giving it to me because I need to be at the table and I need to be part of the change. It's, I am that player. And I don't, like, how do I build a business that doesn't say, we should really diversify our portfolio and maybe we can create some connections that can change the trajectory of our business, instead of being like, you are the trajectory. What do I do to prepare? Is this literally profitability, proof of concept, run those numbers? Like, or is there something else that other people have that I don't, outside of the connections? Or is it connections?
No, I think it's, if you build a great business, there will always be opportunity. So it's profitability. It's the numbers. It's the growth story. Be all things equal, I agree with you. At the end of the day, I'm an investor. I'm going to invest. Yes, right. I first will take and I'll lean into as many founder, women, female-led businesses as I can. But at the end of the day, I invest in good businesses.
Right.
Like, I'm an investor. I'm looking to get a return. So you have to have very good financials.
Mm-hmm.
It's a financial decision. So for anyone out there looking at, you have to make a good financial decision as an investor. Mm-hmm. That's how I make my money. And that's how I then make money to reinvest.
So what are some of the things that you look for financially? When you say, like, you got to know your numbers, you've got to know, like, what are those key factors? Like, when you just take a peek.
Yeah, I think you have to know, A, your current burn on a monthly basis. So how much are you losing? If you're losing, how much are you losing? If you're not losing, great. I love to see that. Okay, well, now let's look at, how do we always continue to improve our growth story? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at, what's your revenue? Mm-hmm. How much are you growing? What's your gross margins? And then what's your profitability?
Amen. Yes.
Those four go.
Like, I'm like, y'all, just pause the podcast.
Pause, write it down.
We're like, rewind it 20 seconds and say, if you want to get in front of an investor, those four elements are going to be a game changer.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a master class.
I know.
This is a master class.
I know. So when we, I know you've had a, you create beautiful content. You had a lot of content. You give back so much. What do you wish people were asking you or talking about that somewhat is kind of being glossed over in 2024?
Oh my gosh. I think if we could just be more vulnerable about how hard it is.
Yeah.
It's hard to make businesses. I'm in it all day long. And I think it's hard. And I think if we just acknowledge it's hard and we support each other through the hard, you know, it's not always picture perfect. And you see it on Instagram, right? You'll see me. People die. I'm like, it looks like you're a whatever you're doing, right? I'm always on vacation. That's it. They're like, you're in Paris, you're in Bali. What are you doing? I'm like, you see one side.
Yes.
You don't see, I'm taking a call at like 2 a.m. from Bali. Nobody sees that, because what, are you going to get a photo?
Right.
I mean, like,
right.
You don't see how hard that I'm hustling all the time for the love of wanting to do it. But I'm always on, and that's what makes me successful. But it's hard. And I think just reminding everyone that's watching, whoever they're watching, there's a lot that's going on behind the scenes. And I'll try to do my part of bringing that forefront so you can see, you know, but again, just watching me at a desk is not exciting, right? It's great to watch me at the Eiffel Tower eating lunch. No one wants to watch me just sitting at my desk in my house. So just acknowledging how hard it is for founders right now, you know, funding's down. It's hard. And so, but for the founders that can make it right now through the hard times, they will come out. I've seen it come and go. I've seen the bottom. I mean, I've seen so many dips in the, like in the macroeconomic climate. And right now, if you can make it through, like you got most entrepreneurs right now, you should be cost cutting, you should be cutting, you know, whatever you can, and just trying to make it through the current winter, you're come out the other side. So you know, great companies are built in hard times, and this is a hard time, and great companies will be built right now.
Right now.
Right now.
Right now.
So as we bring the conversation to a close, I want to go back to that. It's like, it just kind of hit and it keeps on hitting and I'm like, ugh, I wish I didn't hear it. And you had said that the word passion has its root origin in Latin of pain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man. That's, like when you get so passionate about the thing, you have to understand the other side of that coin. And I think that us starting the conversation there and then us ending the conversation around the vulnerability and us understanding that we have to work hard. And while we don't always show what that looks like, that is the passion. And then that is also the pain. What you've done for so many people is like demystify what it means. I didn't even know until I don't even know, like 35, that there were things called investors. Like I didn't know it existed. I think the whole world has opened up so differently. And I am creating the content that I wish I had when I had started my journey. And I'm just so thankful that you're making time. In closing, I know this is so selfish and I'm going to put you on the spot. And if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. We can cut it out of the podcast and nobody knows it existed. You arrived here in Miami by way of New York.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, this morning went great. We started at 7. We were supposed to end at 7:30, I think you had said. And then it went till 10:30 or something like that. Like this really great meeting went long.
Yeah.
And then we're just barely meeting each other in person. And then you had said, oh, I was getting money. That's what I do. I'm getting money. And I'm like, do I ask her now? I'm like, we're not recording. What is I was getting money mean? What were you doing? You're like, I'm raising money. And I'm like, for a fund, for a business, for like, what does that look like?
Oh my goodness. Yes. I mean, I get pitched and I pitch, right? So I think I'm an investor, but I'm also, I also own a lot of companies. So I think if you're a startup, and it's interesting that you didn't know the term investor until now, but maybe you should look for investors, Jasmine. But I feel that, you know, most startups are raising capital in order to grow. And so I'm always out there. I was in New York in investor meetings, pitching some of my portfolio companies for capital, for money to fuel the businesses.
So you are representing the founders who you already invested in?
Yeah.
And so then you go to these other investors and then what do you say? Like,
I say, I believe in this business and it's going to be a home run and I want you to come on the journey with me. Are you in?
What? That is the craziest thing I've ever. I always thought it was on the founder to keep on like pursuing and growing. And what you're saying is, I'm hedging my bets because I'm this good. I like you. I see you. Now I'm going to do what I do in a bigger way that's going to go through and get you more money.
I go with the founder. It's not just me. I'm with the founder. But yeah.
But when you say, I feel like this is the world's dumbest question, but I don't even care. You are in these investor meetings and you're just like, I'm pitching them on my portfolio. So are you taking like founders with you and they're all sitting in the room? Is it like Hunger Games or like, oh, they got 76,000 and we got 760,000? Like, what does this look like? Explain it to me. I am fascinated.
Yes. Yeah, so usually if you're the founder, I'm an investor and I know you have to raise more capital. And so as an investor, because I'm really relationship-based, I want to help, especially young founders that have never raised capital before.
Okay.
So I go with them. I'm like, hey, I'll help you raise money.
And so and there's a lot of it for you.
Because I'm already invested in
the business. And so are you doing this like one-on-one? Like you're saying you go with one founder to investors, and then you go with another founder, or are you saying, hey, crew, all five of us?
No. Like, one founder. So yesterday, I went with one founder and we had multiple investor meetings.
Got it.
Yeah, so we went to investors, we pitched, we went to next investor, we pitched, we went to a dinner, we pitched.
And then after these pitches, are you telling the other, like, are you telling your founder, like, listen, get it together. You got to do this. You got to come back. Are you coaching them on?
Yeah.
And then how much are you? Okay. So then these founders are pitching to these investors. Percentage wise, how much are you talking during those meetings?
I'm there as the founder is sharing their vision. Cause I'm not, I mean, I'm here, but I'm not the founder.
Okay.
The founder's sharing their vision. I'm there for, I understand the numbers. So that's why it's really important that every founder knows the numbers. They understand just like the logistics on a cap table or dilute. There's all these other formalities that most people don't know unless you've already done it. So I'm there just to support on like the financials, on the vision, on my involvement and how I'm going to continue to be involved and support the company. But yeah, I think because you've never done it, it's scary. When I did it, no one was going with me anywhere. It was just me hanging out with my nanny, and I don't think she was going to go pitch with me. So
I feel like it'd be a good, compelling story.
Oh my God, nanny was not pitching, but maybe I should have brought her.
It's just another bonus for that founder to have you as an investor, not just for your money, but for your guidance and your mentorship.
Right.
And to have you there.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, how fun is that you get to go and mentor and do what you love and help other people grow their businesses and make money at the same time?
Yeah, it's all fun.
It's all fun.
It's all fun. Yeah, you get to see like the next generation of people, right? Because no one did that for me. I want to make sure that we're helping other people do that and learn. Because if you can start teaching people, again, how to raise money, how to raise capital, what it means. So to your point, after every meeting, we need to debrief. How to go? What could we, should we pivot our pitch? Did something not work? What is the investor like? What they didn't like? How do we change it for the next? I mean, it's a work in progress, literally.
And I know you're doing this one-on-one with your investors, but you do this on like a grand scale. Like Kim offers her content and all of this advice on social media, in her books, on TV, everywhere. And is that part of your mission? Like, tell me about, as we wrap up, like, I want to know the overall mission, like how we can help support your mission and your goals and like what
and where people can find you.
And that.
Oh my gosh. Yes. No, for me, I just want to, I've been there and I've been at rock bottom and I've seen how hard it is. And I wish I had more people to help me. So that's why I produce all the content. I write the books because, and I do read a lot. I mean, I love to read. When I was growing up, I read so much because I had my parents, which was just amazing. But if you can read from someone else's mistakes or successes, that's where you truly will learn quicker as a founder and entrepreneur because you don't have to learn those mistakes yourself. So I produce content to share what I'm doing, what I'm feeling, how it, you know, how I see the world right now and like what makes a difference in my life and how I've been successful. You can take it, you can leave it, doesn't really matter. Hopefully I'm impacting somewhere where they say, oh my gosh, I use that. I'm just asked someone to coffee. I went and it worked. I'm like, of course it worked. It works. Mm-hmm. I still do it every day. I've got like 3 coffees next week. It works.
Right. How do people find you? Because somebody's listening right now and they've gotten so much information. Like you've opened up this beautiful pathway to see their life and their business different. And that happened in an hour. So where did they go to pursue this relationship with you?
Oh my goodness. Well, you can go to my website at kimperrell.com or follow me on LinkedIn, connect with me on Instagram. I'm out there and I have, you know, so much to share and I'm going to continue to share because we need people that are really trying to give back. And again, it goes back to giving. Like I have so much to give and there's so much opportunity to, again, continue and invest in amazing new founders that are going to change the world.
How? For those of you who are listening, please make sure and connect with Kim on social platforms, but specifically LinkedIn. And just in case you ever want to apply to a job, make sure you follow up via email. That's what we're
need for you.
Persistence is the key. Thank you so much for listening to the Jasmine Star Show. Please be sure to share and subscribe to this podcast. There's other people who need to get this information and you could be the conduit for them. Many thanks over to Kim, my beautiful, gracious, amazing co-host, Jen Gottlieb. And thank you for listening and watching the Jasmine Star Show.